Welcome to the Major League Eventing Podcast, the show for eventing fans by eventing fans. Hi everyone, this weekend is Jersey Fresh Horse Trials, and our sponsor Reading Goat Equestrian is going to have a booth there. Hopefully everyone that goes can stop by, check things out. It's going to be Mother's Day weekend, so a great time to get your mom a nice jumpsuit. Hope to see you there. I'm Karen.
And I'm Rob. And Karen, very special bonus episode.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait for this one.
Really excited to do this one for quite some time. We have probably our number one expert in the OTTB world. Everyone has OTTB questions, right?
Oh, yeah.
Everyone loves them, especially eventers. That's what they're almost bred for besides racing. So we have on the show today, very special guest, the owner of Benchmark Sport Horses, Jessica Redmond. Jessica,
yeah, welcome
to the show.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
I think Jessica has my favorite Facebook page that I love to look at, because it seems like every day there's a new thoroughbred.
It's like getting the Sears catalog when you're little. And you'd go through and circle what you want.
I tell you, you have an eye for the horses. Let me tell you,
yeah.
Jessica.
Thank you.
We love it.
So, Jessica, how did you get your start in horses and in this thoroughbred world?
Well, basically, sort of like most horse people, I grew up with it. My family was involved in the racing industry, so we had a large racing stable, and then my mom did a lesson program and she did some retraining, and I grew up kind of doing the thoroughbreds and pony club and coming up that way, and was just always working with the thoroughbreds that, you know, we were transitioning. So I think my passion kind of began when I realized that while I really liked racing and I appreciate, you know, the racing side, that I enjoyed the retraining side. I like finding, you know, the thoroughbreds and kind of figuring out what kind of jobs they want to do after racing. And that kind of became my passion. I started basically doing that after college, got into it just a little bit, like with sales. And then I worked with Caner Mid-Atlantic, working with their nonprofit, and I worked up at Delaware Park, starting, you know, their listing service. So we had a listing service at Delaware Park, and then I took in a lot of the Caner Mid-Atlantic horses that were donated and did a lot of retraining with those. And then I just decided, you know, sales were really my thing, and I liked, you know, the retraining, but because I have a full-time job, I felt like sales kind of fit my schedule a little bit better. And it was really one of those things where the thoroughbred industry seemed to really be taking off as far as, you know, the makeover projects and people really looking for good thoroughbreds and not having the connections at the track. And I thought, you know, this is something I'm really good at, is bridging the gap between the track and the show world, and kind of finding those horses and supplying them to the show world. And so that's kind of where we chose to specialize. And I think, you know, it's just something you really have to enjoy. And I love the thoroughbred industry and I love the racing side, but I think that the people that can kind of bridge that gap between both worlds, you know, are really needed, because it is two different worlds out there.
For sure. Absolutely. And there's people like, I'm sure across the country, there are people very similar, you know, doing similar businesses, you finding the ones that are sound and all that stuff. And then there's the kind of rescue side, you know. Could you say what's the difference between you guys and like the rescues? What would be like the main difference?
You know, I don't know that there truly is, you know, a huge difference. I mean, we locally, there are some super great rehoming organizations. And, you know, I like to call them more rehoming organizations than true rescues, because I really don't always think that thoroughbreds are being rescued. I think that they're being rehomed. You know, they're not in bad situations, but there are rescues that are taking horses that end up in bad situations. You know, Canner's still doing really good work, and we have Mid-Atlantic Horse Rescue, which is local to me, and they do both rehoming and rescue. And I think, you know, the money side is a little bit different. You know, the prices are a little bit different, but I think the mission is the same for all of us. And I think we all do try to work together to kind of network these horses into appropriate homes and, you know, do the right thing in, you know, making good matches between horses and buyers. But I think, you know, we do all kind of follow the same guidelines, whether it's for profit or not profit. Gotcha. I think, you know, the mission is the same, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And so talking about the business and everything, mm-hmm. Benchmark Sport Horses is your business. And, yes. So tell us about the business. Can you just tell us kind of basically how you operate and what is Benchmark Sport Horses exactly?
Yeah. So what we do is we kind of specialize in finding horses off the track, and bringing them in to, you know, be sold into new homes. So what I do is, you know, because I am a for-profit business, is I'm looking for, you know, the horses that are really going to stand out in the competitive world. You know, horses that are, my basic criteria is 15-3 and up, between 3 and 7. They have to be sound, sound as in the ability to pass a pre-purchase exam, and have clean radiographs, which, you know, we don't have x-ray vision, but mm-hmm. that's yeah. what I'm aiming for.
Yeah.
and no vices. Vices, you know, are just, things that most people can, you know, for personal reasons can live with, but, you know, doesn't make for good resale. And I have a small staff here that, you know, helps. So I have a couple riders that I employ that help. And then, you know, our big piece of what we do is we bring the horses in from the track and, you know, we take free videos. We relunge them. We jump them. Then we start their riding videos, take, you know, confirmation pictures, riding pictures, just to get an idea of, you know, what is this horse all about? What does it want to do? What kind of rider will it fit? You know, and what can I observe about this horse, you know, that I can, you know, determine what kind of buyer will be the best fit? And, you know, that is kind of what we really specialize in is having a good eye to kind of find the horses that we think our buyers are going to want to buy and then getting them in here and assessing them and making a good assessment to ensure that we are making the right match. My horses do sell quickly. I like to think of myself more as a, you know, almost like a listing service, but it's a little different. I mean, I'm just the finder. Mm-hmm. We used to do a lot of retraining and we used to do a lot of showing. I just find that with my full-time job that it's very hard to make all that really fit and have a normal life. So yeah. I think sales for me work well because if we get busy or I want to take time off or I have a long day, I don't have any obligation, you know, to ride a horse. Mm-hmm. And then with the sales, we just take our time and we, you know, it's all sort of the ownership is on me, as far as, you know, if I don't want to sell a horse or, you know, if I think it needs more time or, you know, whatever that may be, there's just kind of no pressure. I can just kind of take it at my own time frame.
Yeah. And you know what, Jessica, one thing that Karen and I really admire about you is your honesty when you get these horses mm-hmm. in. And some are diamonds, some are diamonds in the rough, and some are not what you thought you were buying even. And you're very open about the ones that come in that have, you know, I remember one in the past had a weaving problem. Yeah. One recently you just had really bad feet and an infection from being gelded. Mm-hmm. And the way you not only took care of it, but you let everyone know, hey, this is what's going on with this horse that we got. And he's a nice horse and he's coming around. Can you tell us how that guy's doing right now?
Yeah, the one. So I've had a couple recently that have come in with bad feet. You know, and feet are, you know, I hate to say that thoroughbreds have bad feet because I truly don't. I don't believe that that is the case. I think there are, you know, some tracks that might not have as good of farriers, and there are horses that, you know, of all breeds that are just predisposed to not having great feet. But sometimes bad shoeing can definitely, you know, affect a horse. And so I got in a lovely gray horse that came in, and, mm-hmm. you know, I was told that he was sore on his feet. And then when he got here, he had this huge chunk missing out of his left hind foot. I mean, it was like, it was just the weirdest thing. And he was, when he unloaded off the trailer, I mean, he could barely walk into the barn. Aww. And, you know, you sort of sit there and just go, okay, you know, like, where do we start with this? And so, you know, part of that is like your team of kind of, all right, let's assess, you know, bet wise, how are the x-rays? Okay, everything looks good. So then, you know, we just start addressing it with proper shoeing. And that horse is actually coming along fantastic. Oh,
that's awesome.
And then I got another horse in recently that had a really bad set of glue on shoes applied. I think what happened is maybe he bruised his feet, and then they put glue on shoes on top of that. And the horse was so lame, it was down in the stall, and it required, you know, us blocking its feet just to get these shoes on off of him. It was kind of like one of those gory YouTube videos that you see with the popped abscesses as we pulled these shoes off. It just went everywhere, and this poor horse was just, you know, instant kind of relief. But it's gonna take weeks to, I mean, maybe months. I don't really know. He's actually doing really good. Like, we're thinking we're going to start riding him next week. But as far as being able to market him for sale, you know, I'm just not sure, because he's still going to be a little bit short strided just because he has a lot of bruising from all those abscesses draining. But he also had an infected castration site. So, you know, sometimes it's, you know, you just kind of go, well, that wasn't what I intended, but you have to kind of just deal with whatever, you know, whatever comes in, you know, and sometimes a little frustration because, you know, I wouldn't have sent a horse out like that.
Right.
And that horse, you know, had these issues before it went out. And that frustrates me because it's just sort of like things happen in horses. Like, those two things are things that happen frequently. I castrate a lot of horses here, and, you know, sometimes they do get infected, and, you know, abscesses are common in thoroughbreds, but it's like when we kind of find that stuff out, you know, you have to handle it. You don't pass that on to make it somebody else's, you know, problem. So, so, you know, sometimes that happens, and, you know, that it just, there are things that, you know, horses come in here with. And I think that being honest with buyers is just part of the process. And, you know, you have to make business decisions, but at the same time, put the horse first. You know, I had a horse come in this week that I didn't know cribbed. And, you know, for me, cribbers are just very difficult to market. So I just put it out there, you know, on Facebook, which is where I do most of my marketing, is, you know, this horse is lovely, but he's a cribber. You know, I'd like to sell him now rather than, you know, putting a lot of time into him, because it's just very hard to, you know, to sell them. So, you know, nothing wrong with the horse, lovely horse, but just, you know, hey, he's nice, but he cribs. So if you can live with a cribber, you can get yourself a really nice horse, you know, at a really good price.
There's some good cribbers out there.
Oh, yeah.
There's some.
Yeah.
There's
there's
some upper level cribbers, for sure.
That's just it. You know, I really do. And I truly believe this. My best horses have been cribbers, and all my personal horses have vices, and it doesn't bother me at all. It's just very hard to sell horses with vices, because nowadays, and, you know, most professionals will tell you most of their horses, their top horses, have vices, but even professionals are trying to buy horses to resell.
Sure.
And, you know, we all know that having a vice, until that horse truly is proven and competing, it is hard to get people to overlook those vices. So, you know, what ends up happening is a lot of times people, you know, that want to compete them and get them going a little bit will buy a horse with vices and just think, you know, once I get this horse going around, you know, training level prelim, nobody's going to care that it's a cribber It's such a nice horse. But for me to sell it, you know, early on in the stage, it's definitely much harder. So, you know, and that's, and it's funny because track people, it doesn't even matter to them most of the time. Like, I don't always think that they forget to tell us. I just think that it doesn't register with them that it's a big deal because a lot of horses have, you know, vices, they weave, they crib, they, you know, do whatever, and they just don't think about it. But I am pretty, I try, and like the seller, you know, she's somebody I deal with a lot, and she was just like, I'm so sorry, you know, and she just said, hey, the people at the track didn't tell us, and it happens. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can't, like, you can't be upset about it. You just, you know, say, okay.
Well, that's where you're kind of, your business is great in that you're that layover spot that kind of gets them in, evaluates them, cleans them up a little bit, and kind of does the, you know, kind of irons at any type, but, you know, you find out all these kind of little things that, the guy at the track forgot to tell me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, and, exactly.
And then, and that's why there's the price goes up. You know what I mean?
That costs a little bit more money. Absolutely.
And every once in a while, you're going to get a stinker that you're going to have to sit on for a couple months that came in with glue on shoes. And that's just, that's why when people say, oh, geez, you know, the cost of horses, it's like, well, what you're doing is, it is an incredible, you're taking a lot of that. There's always risk buying a horse, right, Karen?
Oh, yeah.
But taking that little bit of, you know, dealing with the trainers and the track people and all that stuff. And you're definitely helping to weed out some of the really bad stuff.
The way I like to describe it to people is that I'm a high volume buyer, and people know that, and they know that if they're really good to me, that I will keep coming back and buying a lot of horses from them. So they have a lot of incentive to be good to somebody that is going to buy 20 horses a year from them versus that one person that's going to walk into their barn that they don't really know. Yeah. You know, it definitely, it promotes some honesty and some, you know, really good working relationships. And I think that I have a lot of people that I've worked with for a really long time, and I trust them when they call me up and say they have something, they know exactly what I'm looking for. I trust them. You know, people would be very shocked at half the horses that I buy, I've never even seen a video of them.
Wow.
I literally buy them off a picture. I look at their equibase record. You know, I look at their pedigree, their race record, you know, a couple things like that. And then I kind of just go with my gut, you know, okay, yeah, this'll be a good one, you know. And I mean, I love to get videos, but that's not how this whole thoroughbred, you know, sort of I guess the explosion has made the market extremely challenging. When a nice horse hits the market, you have to be very quick, and that applies to all of us. So, you know, if I'm looking on Facebook and I see something, wow, like that horse is really nice, you probably literally have 3 minutes to buy it. And I'm not joking when I say that. Wow. I'm not even joking. And not everybody is comfortable with that process, you know, or has the experience to do that. So I think that's where the being comfortable with taking that risk, you know, works out, you know, is something that I'm comfortable doing because I do it so often. You know, your normal buyer is not gonna, you know, say, oh, I'm just gonna buy this horse off, you know, a picture and somebody's word, because, you know, what kind of crazy person does that? People like me.
What's the quickest flip you've ever had on a horse where you got it in and you got cash in hand and they had it?
So I just sold one yesterday. He was sold within I don't know, 5 hours of being here.
Wow. So,
yeah. And was delivered, I think he got here, you know, like at in the afternoon, and then he was dropped off at something like 5 o'clock this morning. So yeah, it goes really fast. Normally I know when I'm putting videos up of a horse, and I'm pretty confident that it's gonna sell off. It's free videos. So, you know, a lot of times these horses come in and you know, you make a video, and you know, the minute you put that video up, your phone just starts, you know, buzzing, and, wow. and you're thinking, yeah, you know, it's not going to last. you know, that's challenging. And like, I think from an outsider's perspective, people think, well, it doesn't, you know, you're not doing your homework on who you're selling. Because I do feel like I get some of that pushback from people is like, oh, well, you're just flipping the horses. Like, you're not really doing your due diligence. But I think that that would probably only be said by people that truly don't understand what we do and how mm-hmm. we do it. Because at the prices that our horses sell for here, you're getting very high quality buyers. Most of my buyers are people that I know. Most mm-hmm. of my buyers happen to be professionals, other professionals, or really good amateurs. You know, and it's people that I've dealt with or are being sent to me by other people that I know. And I feel completely comfortable selling them a horse, you know, that I know, you know, is green, because I know that they ride as well as we do. They're going to restart them. I don't have any questions or any doubts in my mind about, you know, where this horse is going to go and, you know, what happens if this horse, you know, needs more time or isn't that easy or, you know, things like that. Now, if I have a horse that comes in and, you know, I think it's going to be challenging, and I can kind of tell pretty early on, you know, I will probably steer some people away, or if I don't know them, I'm like, you know, I really think you should come ride it, or let us ride it first, mm-hmm. you know, before, you know, we make a sale. And I'm very comfortable saying no. I mean, there are horses that I get in and I'll get caught on super fancy horses. And, well, I ride 2 days a week. And then I'm just saying, I'm like, nope, that's not going to work for this horse. You know, like that's not going to work. And you just, it's hard to discourage people, but you have to do right by your horses right. and by your program. Because if I sell a horse and it's not a good match, then a lot of times, you know, even just a couple bad rides on a horse can really undo a lot of, you know, the training that we put on. So it's really, for me, it's just more about finding the right home than it is about selling horses. You know, I love to sell horses. I really, really do. But it's just, it's always about making sure it's the right home for the right, you know, the right person, the right job. You know, some people call me like fox hunters. And I'm like, nope, this horse isn't going to hunt. But how do you know? I just have a pretty good idea. So why would I even set that horse up for failure, knowing that horse probably doesn't want to do that job? Or, you know, an eventer will call me and I'm like, you know, this horse just doesn't really seem that brave. And maybe it will get brave. But my initial assessment is, you know, I'm having a hard time getting it over a pole on the ground. Yeah. It's going to need more time mm-hmm. than, you know, you might want to spend, or, you know, that kind of thing. And so each discipline has its own, you know, I think things that they look for. And I think that's part of what makes us successful is that, you know, I do really have a good understanding of, you know, this horse, this one would be good for, you know, hunters, or this one absolutely, you know, should fox hunt. You know, you can feel those horses out in maybe which direction that they want to go.
Awesome.
Yeah. So speaking of, you know, people calling you, inquiring about horses. Can you give us like some good etiquette when inquiring about a horse?
So I think, you know, what I can say as a seller is I really do want to know what your criteria is for your horses. You know, everybody sort of has your general parameters. You know, I'm looking for a mare or for a gelding, or you know, it needs to be this height, and this is what I want to do with it. And I think it helps just to be as honest as possible about what you can live with and what you can't live with. And I say that sort of just meaning, you know, I ride 3 days a week. Okay. Like, that tells me a lot. You know, if I have a horse that's, you know, probably going to need 6 days a week, that horse might not fit you. Or, you know, I have a trainer and I take lessons weekly, or, you know, and I like to trail ride and I trail ride out by myself. You know, all those little pieces really add value in helping find, you know, a good match. Because, you know, as I think it's just important, like even for me, as I've gotten older, you know, I want to ride something completely different than what I wanted to ride 5 years ago. Sometimes I still think I want to ride what I wanted to ride 5 years ago, but I don't. and, you know, I have to accept that. And I think there are that, you know, people sort of sometimes aren't as honest with themselves about what they really want. You know, they're like, oh, but I really want that super fancy, amazing mover, you know, but I need it to be quiet and I just want to jump cross rails. And I'm like, okay, but maybe this isn't the right one for you. Like, maybe we need to, you know, change that. So I think just being open in conversation, and then, you know, the whole vetting thing is, it's just, I think vettings are a hot, you know, they're challenging. Yeah. It's challenging on buyer sides and seller side. So I think it's a stressful piece of the process. And I think being open-minded about vettings in terms of what your true goals are. It's the most frustrating thing for me as a seller to have a horse vetted when a person is maybe going to go baby novice and they, you know, are telling the vet that they need this horse to go around, you know, prelim. And you're like, but you haven't even went baby novice. That's, it's very hard because those are two completely different things. Mm-hmm. We hear so, I mean, the biggest thing, and, you know, we all see it out on Facebook and the bulletin boards. I need a horse that will vet, you know, clean for the upper levels. And I always want to say to people, do you truly know what these horses are running around the upper vet levels vet like? You know, like, it's, there needs to be an open discussion about, you know, there are horses running around with upper, around the upper levels that are just being maintained. And, you know, these upper level riders really know, you know, that these horses, none of them are perfect. It doesn't matter whether it's a thoroughbred or it's a warm blood or whatever it is, because people like to think that, you know, it's thoroughbred that don't that clean. And I just think, no, it's just horses in general.
Right.
It's not breed specific. It's just vettings. You will always find something. So having a good relationship with your vet to talk about, you know, what are acceptable things in a vetting is really important. And just be, I think, open with a seller in that process of, you know, I can live with this or I can't live with that. It helps me a lot because I like to think that all my horses will vet clean. But in reality, like, you know, you never really know. And I try to be open with people that, you know, if I know somebody will not accept a horse that flexes, you know, a half, they're probably not the right buyers for me because horses coming off the track, it's very common to have positive flexions, especially hind end flexions. You know, it's typical to see a one or a two, you know, positive flexion on a horse that's a week off the track. So if you have buyers that are going to walk away from that sale because of that, it's important for me to know that up front, just because I feel like we're all going to waste each other's time.
Sure.
You know, it's just a common thing, and it doesn't mean that the horse has an issue. It's just, you know, the horses are tight. You know, they just raced. Not all horses are tight. So, you know, it's not true for every horse, but I think for some it is. So I think, you know, everyone just needs to be, you know, very honest in that process of, you know, I can live with this, or, you know what, if this horse is even looks like it is going to flex, like I'm going to walk away. So, you know, I think that's, and just being honest in general about, you know, vettings. I think one of these new things that kind of frustrated me and is just, the whole radiograph thing has become a big issue. You know, lots of people x-ray and I think that's great. Everybody, you know, should vet a horse. I think it makes me feel better if horses get vetted. It covers everybody. But then when you're vetting a horse and maybe things don't go how you intend them, you know, the horse, you know, it has a little change, or, you know, that radiograph of its back, its spine, it's a little close in one spot. You know, you're probably going to be back here to shop. And hopefully we just all say, you know what, this wasn't the right one for me, but you know what, I'm going to share these x-rays with you so that, you know, you can help get this horse sold. It's been kind of a big thing to people want to have other buyers purchase their x-rays, you know, and that's, it just kind of makes the whole process just really, you know, drawn out, I think, sometimes. And I'm not against it, but I just think, you know, you always have to keep in mind that you'll probably be back. You know, you want to kind of leave a good, you know, feeling with the sellers. Right. And, you know, it complicates things for us when we know that we have to tell another buyer, hey, this horse, it didn't, you know, somebody passed on its bedding for this reason. And they're like, well, you know, can you share the x-rays? No, I don't have them. You know, so that's just one piece. And maybe people just don't think about it.
Yeah.
But I just always think that about it.
What about if a horse has shoes and they want to do the feet? Is it, what's the etiquette on that? Is that a deal breaker?
Yeah.
That's a touchy subject. So what would be a way around that or a fair compromise with
pain? You know, I think I understand it from a veterinarian's, you know, perspective is that they feel that it is hard to get a complete full picture of, you know, the horse's coffin bone, especially for navicular shots without taking the shoes off. And so, you know, to cover them, they want to take the shoes off. The way that I look at it is a lot of times when my horses come in, I'm trying to do the right thing by the horse and change their racing shoes to, you know, a nice set of, you know, steel shoes that are hot fitted. And so I've already just shod that horse, you know, and you know, you're doing a lot of changes in a short period of time to a horse. And I just don't always think that it's necessary to take their shoes off to get a good picture. In the way that I believe, you know, and this is just this personal view, is that these horses are racing. They're in work. If there truly is, you know, a coffin bone fracture, you would see a horse being lean. I'm not going to say all the time because, of course, there's exceptions to that rule. But on a sound horse with good feet, you know, is it really necessary to take the shoes off? What are we truly, you know, looking for? Thoroughbreds aren't necessarily predisposed to navicular issues or things like that. But, you know, then I say that and it's like that one horse that has it and, oh, well, we didn't do it. So I get it. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, you know, it's an issue. And then the thing is that when you do take their shoes off, if you don't buy that horse, then I'm responsible. You know, I have to have the farrier come back out, put their shoes on. And then a lot of times the horses are just truly very foot sore.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had a horse that just shipped up from Florida this week and they pulled his shoes off, horse shoes, before he shipped up. And I mean, the poor guy, you know, he's just sore. And yeah. You know, you can't expect them to kind of do their job without shoes on. So the way I like to do it, and this is just, you know, how we do it, is that if somebody is doing a bedding and they insist on pulling shoes, it's the last radiographs that we take. And that's just a request that I make of the vet, is that we x-ray everything else first.
Right.
Because then if there's an issue with something else, then we don't pull the shoes.
Gotcha.
You know, and then that way, you know, if we pull the shoes, then it's on the buyer to get the shoes fixed, you know, right. And then that's on them. And it helps me out, you know, as far as not pulling shoes for, oh, we pulled shoes and then, oh, they don't like a hock x-ray. So now I have a horse that's not sold and a horse that's barefoot. And right, then I got to get the farrier back out. And so it just complicates the process. And then sometimes, you know, I had a horse that once we pulled the shoes on it. I don't know. They wanted to come out and take another x-ray of something. And I can't even remember why. And the vet, I don't even know what happened, but it was just said, well, this horse is super lean. Well, the horse, we pulled the shoes on the horse. The horse was crippled, and it was. And they didn't end up buying the horse, not because of the radiographs, but because the horse was so lean when it got its shoes taken off. Jeez. And then we put the shoes on, and the horse was perfectly sound again. So it's just, those things I think are just, you know, you really have to understand the whole process. Like, you have to understand it. Pulling shoes on thoroughbreds just doesn't, it's not a really good thing all the time.
Yeah.
I feel there are a lot of buyers that want to buy horses from me and say, can these horses go barefoot? Or, you know, we plan on pulling shoes. And I'll be honest, I try not to sell my horses that way because right. I don't think thoroughbreds do well without shoes in most cases. And then I think it leads to abscesses and then it leads to lameness, and then people end up calling you and saying, well, this horse is really lean. Right. Yep, you pulled his shoes. No, he's just pretty lean.
It's amazing how some of the track farriers aren't good. Like, I don't know. I just, for some reason, I always kind of like just assume that they're really good. I don't know. I just figured there's so much money invested in the training and the buying of these horses that, you would think that the farrier would be a high, I know there are very, very high end farriers there, but I'm surprised.
Yeah. I think it's just like anything else, even in the show world. I don't think it's any different. I think, you know, you have your good farriers and your trainers that, you know, really study it and, you know, are very conscientious about, you know, foot angles and the shoes that their horses wear and things like that. And then you will find horses that come from certain tracks, at least based in my experience. You know, there's certain tracks local to me that I always know horses are going to come in with these monster, you know, toe grabs and things like that. Mm. In toe grabs, in my opinion, and, you know, everybody has their opinion, I understand the reason behind them, but they can make horses very, very sore behind, mm-hmm. You know, especially on tracks with tighter turns. You have a lot of torque being placed because of these big toe grabs. I mean, I've seen shoes come off horses that I'm just like, it just would amaze you, some of these shoes that we pull off. It's like, wow, I mean, how's this horse even sound? And it's really interesting because I get horses from some of the Midwest tracks. I buy a lot of horses in Indiana, and those horses to me have some of the nicest feet I find in thoroughbreds. And I think, I don't know whether it's because they shoe them almost a little more upright, like quarter horses, you know, like, is it just a different, you know, culture out there? I'm not sure, but it's really interesting. The horses that come in from Indiana and some of the Kentucky tracks, they have big feet, you know, they really let their feet spread out. They tend to shoe them a little more upright, not as long toes. So I think it's just a really interesting observation. You know, where you buy these horses from can definitely, it definitely matters.
How about that? And a toe grab is like a cleat on the front end of the shoe, right? On the bottom. Is that kind of?
Yes. So normally you'll have like a small toe grab up on their front shoes. And then on the back shoes, you can have some pretty big toe grabs. And then sometimes you'll get even like some caulks that look like what eventers would call studs. Mm-hmm. I had a horse come in with some like huge bullet, you know, type of caulks on the back shoes, and you know, it was just really like those things were huge. And you know, now we would kind of equate that to like fox hunters that were wearing like Boreum, yeah, you know, to go out. And the horse was just really sore behind, and it took him quite a while after we pulled the shoes off just to kind of get adjusted. And I think he was just, you know, sore from the torque of the shoes, you know. And yeah, it was just really, it was really interesting.
Wow.
Awesome. That's pretty wild. Very cool. So I have so many questions. I'm not going to keep you all night with every single one of them. So there's a couple things I just absolutely have to get through. And so one of them is, which way should I start first? I'll start with the good. Like, you have, I know since like the Retired Racehorse Project and all this, they've been kind of, now there's a database built of good bloodlines for sport. And do you have any favorite, you know, sires that are like maybe, you know, in your, that someone should look for if they want to be an eventer or a show jumper that you found?
I mean, I love studying bloodlines, and I study it more from the sport horse side, which I think, you know, probably annoys the heck out of racing people because they're thinking, well, you know, I bred this horse to race, and I'm like, well, yeah, that's great, but it's lovely for sport. and I think when you do this a lot, there are certain bloodlines that I almost always, you know, if I see it, I will like seek it out. And it's just because they throw such a distinct type of horse that I've had really good luck with. And on the same hand, there are some that I'm like, I would stay away from that because I've had really bad luck. Like, I just don't like them. And, you know, I don't know why, but I've had a couple. And I buy Stormcats and I love them. So I'm just going to put that out there. I don't believe in all the hoopla about Stormcats. I don't, you know, I like them. I buy them. I think they're a very athletic types. Maybe they're not for everybody, but my buyers are tending to want to buy athletic horses, and they ride well enough to be able to handle those bloodlines. So I don't shy away from them. I'm an AP Indy fan. I really like Dance with Ravens, which is a local, used to stand in Maryland, but now is abroad. I think his horses, they move well, they're athletic, they jump well, they can be quirky, but, you know, that's kind of part of it. Oh gosh, I can, you know, just certain bloodlines I like. Gotcha. They throw, some of them are such a certain, they stamp their horses in such a way. I just had a street boss come in, and I've had a couple of them. They're big, athletic, good moving, good jumping, you know, horses. So I really like them. That's you know, cool. There's just certain bloodlines, and I'm like, if I find them, I always buy them.
That's awesome. and that is fantastic.
You know, people get annoyed when I talk about bloodlines, but I'm like, you know, they don't steer you wrong. Generally, there's times when I've literally not just bought a horse based off its pedigree alone, because I'm a big fan of European bloodlines, the Sadler's Wells. I mean, like, those horses, they're bred for sport. Yes, they're bred to race, but, like, they all run and jump. And you're looking for, you know, in our area, too, steeplechase is really big. You know, I like to see what the people that are steeplechasing are kind of seeking out. Like, what kind of bloodlines do they like? Because that's very similar to what we do and what I look for. And you'll find a lot of similarities. You know, those European bloodlines are just really sought after, and they just make good event horses, you know, so that's definitely something that, you know, we kind of look at. You know, there's some that I'm just not a fan of. I just don't like the body types. I have a certain type of horse that I like, and people say that, they're like, you're whatever you're buying is what we like. Yeah, and
what you're selling, stay, I'm
buying. You know, to that. And what I'm looking for, like, I will buy a horse off a confirmation picture alone, because it's very rare that the confirmation doesn't predict how a horse is going to move and jump. You know, so if you get good at really looking at confirmation, I think it kind of helps. And sometimes I can look at a horse standing, and I can almost know who it's sired by, because a certain sire will stamp their horse so clear. Like I said, the street boss horse I bought recently, I saw a picture of him. Amy Paulus had him, and it was plain chestnut, and I don't even like chestnuts, but I don't care, because when he stood up, like, just the way that the neck comes out of the shoulder, I'm huge. Like, a horse for me to buy, it has to be an uphill horse. Even though I do sell hunters, I try to sell a nice horse as a nice horse. My eye is always drawn to, like, an event horse type. Let's face it, most of the people that buy thoroughbreds tend to be eventers. So that's kind of my market. But, you know, you're looking for the uphill neck. Like, dressage is easier on a horse that's built uphill. Why buy something that's not automatically that? You know, dressage is really fun on a horse that is built for it. And that's what I really truly believe in. So, you know, I think my horses kind of stand out because they have that neck. They have that confirmation. You know, you're looking for a good sloping shoulder, a good hip. You know, I like almost like that old school thoroughbred, the bigger bone, the bigger body. I do like a short, like I like, you know, a horse that's got a lot of power, so short coupled. I don't like the ones that look like blocky quarter horses. You know, the sprinter types are not my favorite, so you won't see me buying a lot of them. That's just not where my eye tends to go to a lot of times.
Cool. Man.
You know, and even a skinny horse, I think you can kind of see the confirmation on. So you can fix a lot. Like, there are things that I buy that people are probably like, oh my God, what? Why did she buy that thing? Within a few months, that horse looks so different. Yeah. You know, so you're just kind of looking at the actual structure of the horse. You know, you can change the weight and the muscle and all that cool stuff. You know, that's the fun stuff. Because I'm like, I like those diamonds in the rough. Some horse that somebody chucked out in the field over winter, you know, it comes in, it's got, you know, 4 inches of hair on it, and you know, it's thin, but underneath that you're going, you know, this horse is really special. So I think I buy sort of some things that people probably like, I don't get that.
That's okay.
Yeah.
So as far as I have two more questions, Karen. I don't know. I'm monopolizing the questions. Do you have a question before?
No, go ahead. Okay, go ahead.
I mean, because I'm monopolizing, but I'm just so, you know me, Mr. Questions. So two more questions. Number one question, time off for a thoroughbred after they leave you. I know every horse is different and physically, how are they handling it and all that stuff. But do you think there's a general rule if a horse, how much letdown time they should have, or is it per horse? I mean, you're selling to a lot of like professionals and stuff. So what are these folks doing? Are they putting them out or are they starting them right to work?
Well, I think the best way that I can say to that is, you know, for me, it's an individual basis. A good horse person will look at the horse as an individual. I find that if you're buying horses that are coming from good trainers and are, you know, being ridden well and are happy and healthy, that, you know, we keep going with them. Like most of us, I think, tend to do kind of like a light program 2-3 days a week. But the horses really, I think, I'm not a big fan of just turning them out and letting them be. But that's, I'm not saying it's wrong. Mm-hmm. I just, that's not what I find has worked the best for me. The reason that I say that, it's kind of like an athlete. So you're taking this horse that's just, you know, in top condition, it's getting all this food and it's, you know, this protein and it's got this muscle mass. And then you just turn it out and you just let it turn into couch potato.
Yeah.
All their muscle and just physical structure, just to me, I just don't like what that does to a horse. It, you know, I like for what I do and I think for the horse's health to keep them in a little bit of a program. Everybody has their opinions about it. I don't know that there's any right or wrong, and I think we all get to the same spot at the end of the day, but you know, I like to think my program works the best, but
it depends on mentally how the horse is handling it. Is the horse
true
mentally?
There are horses that come in here and I'll tell you, like, we get right on them. And then there's horses that come in here and I'm like, I'll talk to you in 3 days.
Yeah. Yeah. You need a time out.
You take your time out. You take a deep breath and then we will chat, because I don't even want to look at you right now. Like, you're too high on life and you just need to go over there. And, you know, but the horses tell you that. Like, yeah. They, you know, I think, and I do believe, and this is truly I believe this so strongly. If you are not experienced, you really should not buy horses off the track, because I really think that it is very hard to predict a horse's personality, attitude, based on what you see walking into the racetrack, because I am experienced and I still just don't think that it is a good, you know, it always works out, because it's just hard to do, you know? And so you get a horse home and it's like, wow, that is totally not what I expected. And if you're not, you know, if you think you're buying this horse like as your forever horse, you know, you could be really disappointed. For me, it's easier because I'm just like, okay, well, that's not going to fit that, but it will fit something else. So I think, you know, it's just mission critical to like have somebody that can help you go through that shopping process and kind of find that personality you're looking for. Cause I just think it's hard to judge personality at the track too. I think a horse sometimes, so interesting to me when these horses come in, some of them are just like show horses and they're like, yeah, we like treats. Like, we like people. we like our baths. You know, we just love life. And then there's other horses that just kind of stand in the corner. They're a little withdrawn. They don't have much personality. And that can take a while for them to just like kind of come out of that shell and settle in. And then the turnout thing, like, that can be a huge deal for horses. I think that's one of the biggest things that like people don't understand about these horses. And it goes wrong real quick. Like, I could tell you that some of these horses that I have, they would not handle being turned out in group situations. You know, you can't just chuck them out into a field. It really matters on how successful you do this transition and how this horse is going to turn out. And I think that's what makes or breaks a lot of people that do selling, retraining, you know, think they want to train thoroughbreds, that kind of thing. Like, there's a method to doing it and doing it well to keep the horse, you know, flourishing, because I do think these horses coming off the track you know, it's rare that you see a horse coming off the track that doesn't look good. I mean, these horses come in, they look like a million bucks. Yeah. I mean, they look amazing. So these horses are being cared for, like the top alfalfa, the best feed, the best care. I mean, these horses are getting everything they need. So for me, it's like maintaining the level of care that they're getting at the track. And that's hard. That to me is really hard, that people probably just don't even understand what these horses get at the track, and then kind of being able to keep the horses happy and like not make them kind of fit our, oh, well, we're just going to turn you out for 12 hours because that's our schedule. And these horses are like, oh God, I can't, I can't do it. You know, and if you try to force it, some of them just mentally, they just unravel. So, you know, you kind of have to figure that out. And people, that's very important to people when they're shopping. If they tell me like, oh, all my horses need to live outside or whatever, I'm like, you can't have that. Like, this horse won't fit you. Because right. I have some horses that maybe want to go out for an hour and then they want to come back in. And yeah. I can figure that out really quick. I'm not saying that that horse isn't going to eventually change, but it's important to know right up front, you know, this horse cannot stand bugs. And if you try to turn it out in summer, like, it's probably, its feet are going to fall apart. It's going to drop weight. You know, it's probably going to look like hell in a course of a month. It really will. That's how quick these horses like deplete if you just don't kind of manage the transition from track to, you know, farm life.
Well, that's very interesting.
Yeah, it is.
That's an interesting insight.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, because a lot of people are probably thinking, you know, I know I always kind of thought it was like the whole put them out in the field and just let them go out and be a horse and all that. But then sometimes that's almost like a crash course because they're used to being regimented and everything being just so.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, like, I think sometimes that's the difference in how horses, you know, look. I mean, in different programs, like people always say to me, wow, like your horses always look so amazing. And I mean, that's a compliment and I appreciate that. But I sometimes think, well, you know, it's a lot of trial and error that we've done over time to kind of figure out what makes horses look the best. I mean, of course, being sales based, you know, I want my horses to look amazing because, a horse that looks good will always sell well. But, you know, I think there's that ways that you can do that, you know, and feed program, like for me, feed program is just, it's huge. I mean, like feed is like the biggest, I mean, and I laugh because it's just a Facebook thing, you know, oh, my thoroughbred's thin. And, you know, it's sometimes just like, you know, I roll my eyes and it's not out of sense of like, I understand people's frustration, but it's like, people don't understand what it takes to feed, you know, a young horse, a growing horse, an active horse, you know, to keep them looking like they keep them at the track. Mm-hmm. Like I always think, you know, do people really appreciate what goes into this whole keeping these horses like looking so good at the racetrack? I mean, if you walk down a shed row of a racetrack, the, you know, what these horses get, I mean, oh my God, like they get the premium of everything and they look amazing. Like they probably come to our farms and think, oh, you know, what's this? You know, so,
It's not just a handful a day.
Right? Yeah, it's not. And you know, you can't be afraid of feeding a horse and make them hot. I'm not a believer in that. You know, I feed straight alfalfa to all my thoroughbreds. Alfalfa is like the base of my feed program. I don't believe it makes them hot. I'm not a believer in that. You'll never make me believe that. And it's just, you have to have protein to create and maintain muscle. Like you want a nice top line on a horse. You want them to look, you know, really good, have a bloom. It's all about protein. So my feed program is, you know, it's alfalfa based. And then I actually feed Triple Crown training to most of my thoroughbreds. It's a 14-14. So it's like, it's, you know, it's a very high fat, high protein feed. But it keeps kind of that consistency so that you don't just drop from the track, you know, and then drop all that protein out of their diet. I think that you have to be careful. Even it's funny at this time of year, people think, oh, grass. But I always sometimes feel like in the summer, my horses start to lose a little bit of weight because they want to just eat grass and they won't eat their alfalfa. and I need them. I'm like, no, eat your alfalfa. Come up and eat your alfalfa. Because it keeps that top line like really looking good. I mean, now you get the spring grass, it's good. But it's just, it's really, I don't know. I'm just like, I have my things that I really like believe in. And my feed program is really simple. It's like, it's not, I don't do any crazy supplements or anything. It's just alfalfa for the most part. All they can eat, slow hay bags, hay feeders. Like my horses have alfalfa 24/7 as much as they want. And it, you know, it works. Alfalfa is good for ulcers. You know, ulcers is a big thing. Really? And yeah, so alfalfa is really, one of the best things that you can do for ulcers in thoroughbreds, you know. So, yeah.
So we're learning all types of good stuff.
Yeah. See, yeah. I never knew that.
Yeah.
We knew.
You didn't
we
know that. Yeah.
We knew. Yep. We were bringing on the pro.
That's one of the things that you know, they always recommend is if you have horses with ulcers and maybe, you know, like the alfalfa, definitely it helps with the stomach, and you know, all you can eat alfalfa definitely helps.
Awesome. Wow. That is fantastic. One last question before we wrap things up. If someone's shopping, you know, people are listening to this all over the world. There's racetracks all over the world. There's horse sellers all over. A red flag. If you go and you're looking at a horse, just what would be a red flag or two or three that, like, just off the top of your head, if someone came to look at a horse and that might just say, you know what, don't look any further. Is that an okay question? I don't know. Is that a dumb question? A red flag?
Like for me looking at a horse at the track, or for people coming here? Like
for people, like, for the listener who maybe doesn't have access to Jessica Redmond, but to
you know, my biggest thing is, so I roll out most of my horses that I look at based on jog videos, and I do think that it's really important to have somebody that knows what they're doing look at a jog video. So people always say to me, do you vet your horses? I don't. Not because I don't think it's important. I think if you're not experienced, you should absolutely have a pre-purchase done. But for me, I have been doing this for so long, I can look at a jog video and just automatically say, you know what, that's not something I can buy. And study the pictures. You know, a lot of us now with the way that shopping is, you're buying a horse based on a jog video and a confirmation picture, couple pictures. What I'm looking at is like, I'll blow up the pictures of the ankles and the knees. I'm looking most of the things that I tend to find are ankles or knees. So like, I'm looking to see, do we see any enlargements? You know, like, do I see ocelots? Do I see any lumps or bumps? Do I see any, you know, thickening in the tendons? You know, I'm really looking for that. And I'm looking at feet, you know, feet definitely. Like if I see a horse that's got like a super long toe and a low heel, I'm probably not going to buy that horse. You know, it's hard to correct. It takes time. And that's not always the best for what I'm trying to do. So those are the things that I'm looking at. But like, it's mission critical to look at that. And then I will say, race records. People do not pay attention to race records. Before I even look at the horse's picture, I will pull up the race record, because you can find, you know, what I'm looking for is, did the horse run consistently with no major gaps in the records? Okay. Or, you know, are the gaps explainable? So what I'm looking for is, like, it's typical for most race horses to run twice a month. You know, somewhere in there, twice a month, once a month, that's pretty normal. If you see a big gap, like the horse has been off for 6 months, and then it comes back and it runs, and then it's off for another 3 months, like, it's just a red flag. And I just think, unless it's explainable, and most times it's just not, I just don't invite that.
Very good.
You know, I don't. I think it tells you something. Mm-hmm. It may mean nothing. It may mean something. But, you know, if you can't get the answer to that information and you don't feel good about that the answer is truthful, then just walk away. Like, okay. there's always another horse. You know, so that's a big piece. Like, learn to study the race record. You know, look at the results. You know, sometimes you pull up and it says did not finish. Sometimes it's because the horse stumbled and it lost its rider, or it didn't break from it. Something stupid. Mm-hmm. That's fine. I'm cool with that. But I actually, like, pull that stuff up and I like read it and I look at it, and you know, that's the kind of stuff I'm looking for. Sometimes if a horse like starts out really good and it ends up really bad, it could mean that it's a breathing problem. It doesn't always mean that, but you know, I'm just kind of like looking for patterns, stuff like that, you know.
And you're a real detective.
So you have to be.
That's awesome. But that's brilliant. That's
the other thing is Google. Like, I would love to tell people just Google. You would be shocked at what pops up. Google, plug that horse's name into Facebook and Google it. Because I do that for every horse that I buy that I don't know the people. You know, come on, we all Facebook stalk each other. You know, I think it's important and I think you should do it. And everybody, every shopper should do their due diligence. And that means like your good Facebook stalking and your Googling, because I have had things that pop up and I'm like, wow, I'm so glad I looked that up. You know, like just you would not believe what is out there, information wise. And you know, like, look up that trainer, look up that seller. Like, I think reputation is everything. And you know, there, I will say, you know, right out, there are people that sell horses that they could have the nicest horse in the world and I wouldn't buy it from them because I've just had really bad experiences, you know. And I think, you know, it's a valid point. Ask people about, you know, whatever, you know, there's looks, all of us do this, like some of us just don't like each other, whatever, like it is what it is, but there are, you know, some valid, you know, stories that are like, hey, you know what, I just had a bad experience. Because sometimes people ask me and I'll say, you know, my experience wasn't good for X, Y, or Z reason, you know, and I will let you make your own decision. But you know, for me, it's about what happens when things go wrong and how somebody addresses the issues, because I go into it knowing that there's risk. I'm accepting of risk. I don't always blame sellers, but there are times when I'm like, you knew that, you just plain just hit it, didn't tell me, whatever. That stuff upsets me. So, you know, I feel people should know that. You know, so I think those are things that you can find out pretty easily when you buy horses.
I appreciate just, that.
You know, yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome.
That is awesome. This is the smart stuff that I knew we would get at Jessica. So
Equibase.com. Equibase. People need to know. That's where you know, your horse's race record would be. So every thoroughbred, I tell them, you go to Equibase.com. It's free. You plug in the horse's name and it will pull up their whole race record. You can look at their pedigree, you can look at the trainer, the jockey, all of that information.
Cool.
Very cool.
Awesome. Oh man, this is great, Karen.
Yeah.
So as we start to wind things down, Jessica, we always like to make sure that we recognize any sponsors that you might have or anything like that. So do you have any, you mentioned Triple Crown. I don't know if they're a sponsor, or do you have any sponsors out there that you'd like to shout out?
They're actually not even a sponsor. I've just, I'm sort of a loyal customer. You know, it just works well for my horses. I am sponsored by County. We like County Saddles. Just they fit the thoroughbred backs really well. They have a lot of really good options, like skid row panels and wither gussets to, you know, address some of the issues that we find with our thoroughbreds. You know, they have those hollows on the side of their withers and they might not quite have, you know, a very wide back. So I think, you know, it just works well for the type of horses that we deal with the most. And then I have the Rural Rider stirrups, which we really like the Rural Riders, because the nice thing about them is they have a wide foot base. They offer a lot of security. And when you're riding young horses, I truly do think that your tack matters, you know, because it's, you know, situations can get a little hairy. So yeah, you just want to be secure and you know, a good saddle and a good secure stirrup. And I think PSPN should sponsor us, because people always like, you know, comment on our bridles, but we're not sponsored by them. But we like dressing up our horses with blingy brow bands. Yeah. I don't know why, but it's just, you know, I don't like bling or anything like that, but I think a good classic thoroughbred with like a little bit of like, you know, nice brow band, you just can't beat it.
Yeah, no.
Your pictures do look very nice, and you have nice riders your horses. I love
And my team is awesome. I do have Kayla Muller. She has her own business, but she comes over and helps us out with riding and does a great job. And, you know, we're just really passionate about what we do. And like, we really we just really like all of our horses, and you know, each of them is just so unique. I think that's the fun part. They're all so different.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is. So how can our listeners contact you on the social media website?
So our website is benchmarksporthorses.com. We keep that updated. So it's always got, you know, everything that we have in at the moment with their pictures and their video and their pedigree and their price and all that good stuff. And then I have a Benchmark Sport Horses Facebook page as well. And most people just follow my personal Facebook page, which is like mostly horses and cats. So if you don't like horses and cats,
that's what we do. We're stalkers. We're Jessica Raymond stalkers.
I feel like, you know, people are probably just like, please stop posting horses.
I don't think so at all.
That's what we do.
How many friends would you have if you didn't post horses?
That's a joke. It's true, though. I mean, like, we go places, and that's the fun part is that, I think social media is so cool for the way that you can follow your horses. Like, you can get updates, and it just connects everybody together. Sure. And I think that's what it's all about. You know, you can kind of like, the track people like to follow their horses, and they love seeing their new videos. And, you know, I think that's what makes like us all do this. You know, I like that part of it. I mean, social media is a blessing and a curse, but it's, you know, I think it's more good than bad for the most part.
Do you have like a favorite horse that like made it to the upper levels?
Oh boy. You know, I've got a lot of horses right now that are kind of going around. They're like doing like 1 stars and 2 stars. So hopefully I've got some that kind of really make it big time. But a lot of, you know, our business kind of has been within the past, I want to say like within the past 4 or 5 years is when I really like started doing my own. So hopefully, you know, it takes that long to really truly get them up there. But you know what? I will honestly say, people ask me all the time, I love selling horses to do the upper levels, but I also, there's nothing better than like, you know, people that just love their thoroughbred. So to me, it doesn't matter. Like, I don't care if you ride well. I don't care about any of it. And people get so, they sometimes feel like they have to apologize because they're like, we just went and jumped cross rails. And I'm like, I don't care. That's awesome. Like, for me, that's the biggest piece of like our business is just those amateurs that are so happy with their thoroughbreds. Like that is, you know, for me, like that's just like a highlight because they're happy. Like people that didn't even know that they like thoroughbreds that are out there like feeling confident, having a good time, you know, that's everything right there. So we do sell lots of upper level horses, but I mean, I sell horses to, you know, beginners, and I mean, I have all kinds of thoroughbreds. Like I have thoroughbreds that like grandmas could ride, but you know, like people will call me and they're like, oh, I'm looking for this. I'm like, well, I actually do have that, but it just, I think that's the, you know, that's the fun part is that you never know what, like, you know, you're going to get. And sometimes we'll have horses that come in and I'm like, this horse is just so, you know, it's so quiet. It truly might just want to pack around the beginner novice. Like, that's great. Like, that's fine if that's, like, you know, what you want to do. Like, that's probably all I'm going to do with my horse. And, like, you know, that's fine. He doesn't care. He doesn't know that he's really fancy and, you know, could probably run around prelim. He's like, I'm just happy because you feed me. So I don't think anybody should feel guilty, you know, about what level they're going or, you know, that to me means absolutely nothing at the end of the day. Like, I just want people just to be happy with the horses that they buy. So, you know, sure, we like to see our horses running around the upper levels, but I don't, you know, I'm going to be thrilled if you went to a local hunter show and did well. We did have two that won the makeover last year. So that was really exciting.
Oh, cool.
We had the most, America's most wanted thoroughbred was one that I sold. So that was really cool. Nice. That one was with Elisa Wallace, and then she won the eventing division. And then I had a horse that won the hunters, which was so exciting for me. Because I don't sell a lot of hunters. Like thoroughbreds and the hunters are kind of, you know, that's a harder niche to fill. I don't find that the hunter, it is growing. I've been told that it's, lots of cool divisions going on in the hunters for thoroughbreds with the tip and lots of thoroughbred divisions. And, I think they called it the take two. So we do have some people that are really now seeking out the thoroughbreds for the hunters, which is, I think that's awesome.
Yeah, it is
awesome.
It is.
That is awesome. Awesome. talk about awesome.
Yeah.
This interview.
This was great.
Holy smokes. Jessica, this is fantastic. Yeah. Thank you so much. And anyone out there, you know, they have questions about thoroughbreds and stuff, or they want to start stalking Benchmark Sport Horses on Facebook or Jessica Remen. I love it. I mean, it's I find myself like looking forward to it. And then I do find myself looking forward to it because I just love seeing those new horses you get in. And, it's
and like, then we fall in love with one, and then it's like the next day it's sold. We're it's like, cool. Darn it.
So, Jessica,
yes, thank you. You have to be fast buyers.
Thank you so much again for joining us.
Yeah, this was great.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. You can leave us a review on Apple iTunes or visit us at MajorLeagueEventing.com. Cheers.